The opinions expressed on the following sponsored program are strictly those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of this station, its staff, management, or sponsors.
You are tuned to Natural Doc Radio, brought to you by AMT Centers, bringing you health information based on the latest research from respected sources around the world. Learn what you can do to enhance health, strengthen muscles, maximize memory, and energize all the systems of your body. Every day, listen for health information on the latest testing procedures available at AMT centers, as well as the interpretation and action needed based on your test results. Listen for special events at advanced medical testing centers. Tune in. Get healthy. Now, here are your hosts for the hour, Dr. Herb Slavin, MD, and Janet Cimarelli, licensed nutrition counselor.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Dr. Herb Slavin, and joining us shortly, right after the first break, will be Janice Cimarelli, licensed nutritionist. I wanted to start talking today about one of the most common problems that we see with patients that's being entirely overlooked because there are no prescription drugs to treat the problem, basically. And what I'm talking about is prediabetes. Prediabetes, as the name implies, is the situation people are in before they meet the criteria to be diagnosed with diabetes. So what is that criteria? Well, when you go to a doctor, you know, he'll usually want to get your lab work fasting. So an elevated blood sugar, a fasting blood sugar, would give you the diagnosis of diabetes. Usually a blood sugar, depending upon what year it's done, either over 100, sometimes it used to be over 110, and then they would say you're diabetic. Another way to diagnose, I don't know if you can say pre-diabetes, more for diabetes, is the hemoglobin A1C or glycohemoglobin. If that's elevated, you're told you have diabetes. Now, it's not that one day you're normal and the next day you have diabetes. There's that whole transitional period in the development of diabetes that's being ignored. That's the pre-diabetes stage. So how do you identify people in that category? Well, the best way, and of course this is not being done, is the glucose insulin tolerance test. And I'll get to that in a minute. I just want to talk about the tests that are more routinely done because you can still get a little insight into whether the person has prediabetes. And that would be a fasting blood sugar. I would say, even above 85 or 90, you know, even though that's within range, that's in the upper part of the range. See, here's the problem. When they come up with these ranges that they call normal, they're not really normal, they're average. And we really don't know who was included in those ranges, whether there anybody that was sick, whether anybody that had any other issues at the time. We don't know. Ideally, what they should include is perfectly healthy people that they knew were healthy and get the ideal range, but that's not what's done. So they have these broad ranges for blood sugar. It could be as wide as 65 to 110 for a fasting blood sugar. And they say, well, if you're in that range, everything is fine. Well, clearly, you couldn't say that someone with a fasting blood sugar of 65 is the same as someone with a fasting blood sugar of 100, even though they're both in the normal range. The other test that's not routinely done is a fasting insulin level. That sometimes helps define prediabetes better because an elevated insulin level specifically means you have insulin resistance. That's what you see in prediabetes. And the difference between prediabetes and diabetes in the adult onset or type 2 diabetes with regard to insulin is you have an elevated insulin level in prediabetes with a normal blood sugar. See, so that would be the criteria for prediabetes, whereas with diabetes, you have the adult onset, you have both an elevated insulin level with an elevated blood sugar. In other words, you've developed so much insulin resistance now that it can no longer control your blood sugar, or your body is no longer producing enough insulin, even though there's insulin resistance, to control your blood sugar. So now the blood sugar is out of range, and the diagnosis of diabetes is made. Now the doctor knows what to do. He prescribes medication to lower your blood sugar. Important distinction that needs to be made, and I see sometimes this happens too, is patients who really need to be placed on insulin, even if they have type 2 diabetes, are sometimes still given oral medication associated with more side effects than just giving insulin alone. But the problem still exists. If you have insulin resistance, even giving insulin to a person with insulin resistance is going to require higher doses of insulin to control the blood sugar. So there have to be strategies to reduce insulin resistance. But you can't reduce it unless you identify it. And that's where we come back now to the glucose insulin tolerance test, because the true criteria to identify insulin resistance is if the insulin returns to baseline after a challenge within a two-hour period. You see, when you do a fasting blood sugar in the morning, you've had, 8 to 12 hours, depending upon when you last ate, at least 8 to 12 hours of fasting. So you're giving your body that much time to return to normal. So someone could have, theoretically, diabetes or definitely pre-diabetes with a normal fasting blood sugar or insulin level. And that's really the problem. We're not identifying as many people as should be identified. And the reason you want to identify someone at this stage, because that's when it's easily reversed. So a couple of things happen if you reverse the disease process. Number one, less damage is done to your body because of the condition. But it's a lot easier to reverse a condition in its earliest stages rather than just deal with the symptoms later on. Now think about it. What would you prefer? Taking medication to control your blood sugar? Or just changing your lifestyle a bit to not require medication, and at the same time your blood sugar is naturally controlled because your insulin is working properly? That's a rhetorical question. I think everybody would agree on the answer to that. But we're not identifying the people. And I think if we did, I think we can motivate people to just make the tiny little steps to change their lifestyle to reverse the whole process. Now, I think most people are familiar with the side effects of diabetes. The major ones, of course, are heart disease. Cancer has even been added to the list. And primarily you have end organ failure. You know, diabetes and even pre-diabetes are associated with diabetic retinopathy. You have eye problems. You have kidney problems associated with diabetes and pre-diabetes. In other words, the damage of diabetes is made, it starts earlier than that during the pre-diabetic stage. You also have peripheral neuropathies. You see a lot of commercials on TV to treat those problems. You have peripheral vascular disease. So there are a whole list of issues that accrue from lack of control of both insulin and blood sugar. And we're not really being told who's at risk for that until you're diagnosed with diabetes, because the tests aren't being done. So the two-hour insulin glucose tolerance test, if you really wanted to be precise and make the diagnosis early on, is a fasting blood sugar and insulin level. That's done. And then the patient is given a glucose challenge. It's a measured amount of carbohydrate in a drink. And then the glucose and insulin are rechecked in the half-hour mark, the one-hour, and the two-hour mark. And by 2 hours, both the insulin and glucose should be back to normal. And you can diagnose many conditions, well, diabetes and pre-diabetes, using this test. If the blood sugar is back to baseline in 2 hours, and this is why a glucose tolerance test by itself is not enough, because the glucose could return back to normal in 2 hours, yet the insulin level stays high. So that's your pre-diabetes patient. And, of course, if you have both the insulin and the blood sugar remaining high at the two-hour mark, then you have diabetes. And I'm talking about it because it is one of the most common conditions facing Americans in this country because of lifestyle and dietary habits. Now, there are a couple of strategies that need to be implemented to address this problem. But again, I emphasize you have to identify the patient. Early intervention is the best approach to any illness, and that's what mainstream medicine agrees with that. Of course, their definition of early intervention is different than optimal early intervention. In other words, they intervene when the blood sugar, fasting blood sugar goes above normal, and they consider that early intervention. In other words, before you get the eye problems and the kidney problems and the peripheral vascular disease. And I'm saying you can identify people way before that and intervene. So you might even be able to reverse the process before the need for any medications go on. And we see this conflict between definitions of early intervention almost across the board. I'll just digress for a second. In heart disease, another thing, when they do a stress test on a patient to identify whether they have heart disease or not, that's not early intervention. That's looking for people that are qualified, so to speak, for bypass surgery. In other words, if you fail a stress test, it means your heart isn't getting enough blood flow, and now you're a candidate for bypass surgery. So that's not early intervention. Early intervention would be performing a calcium score, which is a usually a CT scan of the chest. It's a fast scan, looking at the calcifications in the coronary arteries, which correlate with the amount of plaque in the artery. And if you have more calcium and therefore more plaque in the artery than predicted for your age and gender, you can be alerted to this way before you meet the criteria for bypass surgery. In other words, let's say you're a 50-year-old and you have more than expected for your age. You might still go for a stress test and pass it perfectly well, but wouldn't you like to be told that you're on the wrong path, and if you keep on that path, you will need bypass surgery? So, early intervention it sounds great, but you have to understand what they mean by early intervention. And right now, it's time for a break. You're listening to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Dr. Herb Slavin. After the break, we'll be joined by Janet Cimarelli, licensed nutritionist, and we'll be back right after this.
Current medical treatment addresses problems and symptoms when your ship of health has gone aground, hit the shoals of disease, so to speak. Now, advanced medical testing helps to guide you through the stormy seas of disease. The information from high-tech lab tests such as Doctor's Data, Spectracell, Cleveland Heart Lab, Access, Health Diagnostics Laboratory, and Genova. These advanced tests assist you and your doctor to navigate the treacherous waters of disease development. Call 754-216-2332 to find out more, or visit amtcenters.com.
Are you looking for expert advice on how to improve your health, but want to do it from the comfort of your home? Now you can conveniently schedule remote consultations with Janet Cimarelli at janetcimarelli.com. Janet is a licensed nutrition counselor specializing in the field of natural foods and supplements. Janet offers consultations via phone, Skype, or email with the convenient and flexible times to meet the needs of your busy life. Janet will educate you on how to manage your diet and lifestyle to overcome illness. Her areas of expertise include allergies, diabetes, heart disease, hormone replacement, weight management, insomnia, and healthy aging. Don't wait. Schedule your appointment with Janet, and she'll guide you to change your diet and change your life. Take control of your health at JanetCimarelli.com. And tune in to hear Janet on Natural Doc Radio, Monday through Friday, 10 a.m., right here on this station.
And we're back. I'm Dr. Herb Slavin. You're listening to Natural Doc Radio. And joining us now is Janet Cimarelli, licensed nutritionist. Good morning, Janet.
Good morning, Dr. Slavin. Okay, I've been listening to the last few minutes of the show, and such a critically important topic for us to be discussing today, because, as you said, so many people dealing with this issue. It's an epidemic.
And the real problem is that I would say for everyone that knows they have the problem, there are probably twice as many that don't know they have it, and they're missing an opportunity to really engage themselves to correct the problem.
Okay, now I have a question, because you were talking about the two-hour fasting glucose insulin tolerance test. Mm-hmm. Are there any dangers for that in somebody who has very, very unstable blood sugar or very unstable ability to manage glucose in their bodies?
Well, potentially there is, and the only danger there really is if your blood sugar goes too low when your body releases insulin. And that's important to know, too, because that's also felt to be an early sign of diabetes and, of course, pre-diabetes, where the body has lost its ability to control proper insulin secretion. But you're in a lab or a doctor's office when the test is being performed, and if you feel some of the side effects of low blood sugar, you can be given something to correct that. But most of the time, the patients may feel some slight discomfort, like they know there's something wrong. You know, they may feel lightheaded or dizzy. But that's the whole point of the test. You want to draw the lab work when the patient is being symptomatic so you can identify what's going on. A lot of times patients will come in and complain of certain symptoms that might be associated with low blood sugar, you know, that mid-morning crash that many people experience. And the glucose insulin tolerance test can identify those people. In other words, you can repeat the symptoms they were complaining of with this test, and then you have a specific diagnosis as to why they may have felt that way.
I have another question. We've talked a little bit on the show before about so many people having issues with digestion. So they have an inflamed digestive tract, and that inflamed digestive tract tends to create symptoms of that gastroesophageal reflux. So they're feeling a burning in their esophagus. Sometimes people are dealing with a persistent cough, and the cough tends to come not from a postnasal drip or any kind of respiratory issue, but the cough comes because of irritation in their esophagus. Maybe they have a very, very poor digestive system where they're feeling bloated, or any number of different digestive problems, heartburn, indigestion, bloating, reflux, all of that. Might any of that be early signs of the development of unstable blood sugar?
Well, it might be. I mentioned how different organs are affected by high insulin, high blood sugar levels. And certainly the digestive tract is no exception. A lot of nerve endings in the digestive tract. And there, you know, it's been identified, for example, in diabetes, that they may have difficulty emptying their stomach after eating, call that gastroparesis. So clearly, yes, you can have digestive tract symptoms with diabetes and pre-diabetes, but I wouldn't automatically say if someone were having those complaints that it was pre-diabetes. You'd have to, you know, check a lot of different things. Now, Janet, here's the interesting thing and why I decided to talk about this a little bit today, because this was something new to me, that they've associated magnesium deficiencies with increasing your risk for diabetes and pre-diabetes. Had you heard of that connection?
It's very, very interesting, because one of the connections that I make with regard to that statement is, if people have cravings, it could be cravings for sugar, cravings for sweets, cravings for chocolate, it may very well be indicative of a magnesium, low level of magnesium. Maybe not necessarily a total magnesium deficiency, but possibly that your magnesium level, your cellular magnesium level, would be in the low normal range.
Now, Janet, you know, what I try to do in my practice at the Institute of Advanced Medicine, again, identifying people early on with issues before they really become symptomatic. That's why I say just because you feel good doesn't mean you're not sick. Or sometimes you have symptoms that you're told are normal, you know, and they say they're normal because they're so common, but that doesn't make them normal. And magnesium is, number one, a very common deficiency we find in people, and number two, a very easy deficiency to correct. So here are some of the other symptoms associated with magnesium deficiencies. You mentioned digestive tract issues. Now, bowel disease is associated with magnesium deficiencies. Hypoglycemia is, that's a dysregulation of your insulin glucose production. But the big ones, heart disease, high blood pressure, kidney disease, these are common, osteoporosis, depression, fatigue. I mean, all these problems may in part be due to a magnesium deficiency. And, you know, one of the things I'd like our listeners to consider is think of your health as a chain link. You know, it's only as strong as the weakest link. And if you're missing magnesium and you could be doing everything else right, you're still going to have problems. So when you want to fix your body, you have to address everything, and you can't know what's wrong without testing. We always come back to testing, and you have, when it comes to magnesium, you have to do the right test. That's an intracellular magnesium. There's a lab that we use for Medicare patients, because Medicare covers a test, from Exitest, where they take a swab of the mucous membrane in your mouth and look at the different minerals inside the cells in your mouth, not just magnesium, but the most of the important minerals in your body. And of course, you can just do a red blood cell magnesium. What you don't want to do is a serum magnesium, because that's worthless. Your magnesium is found within the cell, mostly about 90%. So why would you want to look at the area where 10% is found? You have to look where the 90% is. And then you can address it. Now, the only problem with magnesium for people is that sometimes it causes diarrhea if they take too much. And those people, if we can't correct the magnesium deficiency, and this happens sometimes, we have to give it intravenously. I've had patients come into the office, for example, and they come in with an irregular heart rhythm, and we give them intravenous magnesium in the office, and it corrects the rhythm. Now, these are abnormal rhythms that are not dangerous like some others that might require hospitalization. So you don't automatically want to avoid hospitalization. But many times, just by correcting the magnesium deficiency, you can correct abnormal heart rhythms. Some of the other problems associated with low magnesium are migraine, headaches, and insomnia. A lot of different problems, but the big one today, we're talking about diabetes. Magnesium deficiency will also contribute to increasing the risk of pre-diabetes and diabetes. So Make sure you're getting that test done and then correcting it.
It's a very important thing for people to understand as well. When we talk about prediabetes and diabetes and blood sugar issues, unstable blood sugar, hypoglycemia, where people feel shaky and very cold or weak, very fatigued, maybe even really cranky, when their blood sugars are dropping, when that happens, it's very important to understand we're not talking about just your pancreas. And there are a lot of different supplements available, and the one that I'm thinking is specifically pancreatin. There are different digestive enzymes that include pancreatin, hydrochloric acid as components of their formulas, but it is a much bigger issue than just addressing your pancreas. And one of the things that I talk about is if we were to discuss the entire picture of blood sugar instability, we need to consider liver function. And I tell people that the liver, the gallbladder, and the pancreas work together in such a synergistic manner that it is so, so important to be supporting your liver. And a very easy way to begin that process would be with aloe vera. And I know that, Dr. Slavin, in your office, you have glutalomine, and that is a combination of the amino acid glutamine, which is going to be so very, very healing and anti-inflammatory to one's digestive tract. And then in addition to that is the aloe vera component of the formula. That aloe vera is going to be anti-inflammatory as well as very supportive and cleansing, very, very gentle detoxification to the liver. When you do that gentle liver detoxification, both the gallbladder function and the pancreas function improve. There's research that's showing that there is a very slight, minimal, but very well-documented benefit to blood sugar and insulin levels with the use of aloe vera. So very important to consider the entire digestive tract, not just to think that addressing your pancreas will do the job. Dr. Slavin?
All right, there's that music, which means it's time for us to take a break. You're listening to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Dr. Herb Slavin, and with us this morning is Janet Cimarelli, licensed nutritionist, and we'll be back right after this.
Advanced Medical Testing Centers is proud to sponsor Natural Doc Radio, co-hosted by Herbert Slavin and Janet Cimarelli. They're located at 7200 West Commercial Boulevard, Suite 209 in Lauderhill, and you can find them on the web at advancedmedicaltesting.com. Advanced Medical Testing Centers is your premier blood draw center, staffed by professionals with over 15 years' experience. Clean, comfortable, and efficient. They guarantee your appointment time and guarantee the lowest prices. They test for cardiovascular disease, cancer, diabetes, and more. They draw for all specialty labs, including Access, Health Diagnostics, Simulex, Innovative, Quest, LabCorp, and others. Call them today to set up an appointment. 754-216-2332. That's 754-216-2332.
The Institute of Advanced Medicine brings you the latest in natural health care. Reviewing the published research, attending conferences with health experts from around the world, that allows the healthcare team at the Institute of Advanced Medicine in Lauderhill to provide you the quality and experience you're searching for in a healthcare team. Testing to target your individual needs and treating with natural and holistic approaches The goal is wellness. You can reach the Institute of Advanced Medicine easily on Commercial Boulevard, just west of the Florida Turnpike, or three blocks east of University Drive in Lauderhill. You can call us 954-748-4991 to learn more. 954-748-4991.
And we're back. You're listening to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Dr. Herb Slavin, and with us this morning is Janet Cimarelli, licensed nutritionist. But before we get back to our topic of diabetes and pre-diabetes, Janet, I just want to remind our listeners that they can go to naturaldocradio.com. That's our website where they can see all the radio programs archived. And I'm mentioning it specifically today because last Friday we had a great guest, Dr. Sherry Rogers. I mean, so important, the information that she was relaying to everybody about how the environment makes us sick and what to do about it. And you can go to naturaldocradio.com and listen to the program at any time. And by the way, she'll be a guest this Friday again, so you really don't want to miss it. But you never really have to miss it if you go to naturaldocradio.com. Now, Johnny, you want to tell us a little bit about tomorrow's guest?
Oh, we're going to have such a wonderful discussion. Tomorrow, Dr. Len Horowitz will be joining us, and his name may be familiar to a great many South Floridians. He did many book tours and meetings, seminars, educational groups here in South Florida. He will be talking about his new book about an energy frequency that is very, very healing. And he'll be talking about all of the different approaches that he has been using over the years to improve people's health around the world. He teaches people so many different things, from supporting health through nutrition, recovering health with therapeutic nutrition, and supporting overall well-being through the use of energy and music approaches. And that's most of what we'll be talking about tomorrow. But he will be speaking to us from Hawaii. He has a resort in Hawaii, and I'm sure he'll tell us all about steam vent Springs Inn, Steam Vent Inn, and I'm sure that it's going to be a very educational, informative, and lively discussion. Dr. Horowitz, Len Horowitz, always brings lots of dramatic information to our listeners and to people who tune into his web broadcasts and read his books. Dr. Slavin, I wanted to say that you were talking about, sometimes people deal with a little bit of challenge when they are supplementing with magnesium. And sometimes the effect of the magnesium on people might be loose bowels or something like that, a digestive system disturbance. And one of the suggestions is, you might not necessarily be overdosing or have a very, very well supported magnesium status in your body when you get loose bowels or a digestive system reaction. It's more what I have found to be an issue with your body just is not accustomed to getting the magnesium in a supplement. And so I tell people you have to start very, very low dose and very gradually increase it. And probably the recommended dose to optimize magnesium status would be in the range of 500 to 750 milligrams of magnesium. The other part of it is you need to be very aware of what the form of magnesium is that you're consuming. Magnesium oxide is very, very stressful for the digestive system. For sure going to create a digestive system response. So be very important to look at the types of magnesium in your magnesium formula. You would want things like magnesium citrate, magnesium malate, ascorbate. There are a lot of different forms of magnesium that would be more beneficial choice than magnesium oxide. Now, of course, there are those people out there who want to use magnesium to support elimination. So some magnesium oxide in a total chelated form of magnesium would be a really, really good choice. Dr. Slavin, you mentioned that you do intravenous magnesium. Appropriate? How important is that for most people? Is it just for people who have heart arrhythmias, or might it be helpful for people who have muscle pain, muscle spasms, backache, maybe even kidney stones, I'm thinking?
Well, that's true. It can also help with kidney stones and all those things you just mentioned. But with cardiac arrhythmias, it's particularly effective. But again, this all stems from people with low magnesium levels. So here's how we identify those. Two things you have to do. You have your red blood cell magnesium or intracellular magnesium tested. And at the same time, you do a urine magnesium level. And here's why. If you have a low magnesium within your cell, and yet your body isn't conserving magnesium, and we can tell that because it shows up in the urine, you know, high levels as opposed to very low levels, which would indicate your body's conserving it. That tells me your body has lost the ability to conserve magnesium, and you're not really going to be able to raise your magnesium levels just taking oral dosages. So that's important to know. And usually that's associated with accumulations of heavy metals. In other words, other minerals that are competing for the receptor sites that magnesium would normally use. So if they're bound up, if all those receptor sites are bound up, the body thinks there are no mineral deficiencies, so it doesn't see any need to conserve magnesium. So those people that cannot tolerate magnesium because of loose stool, for example, they would be a candidate for IV magnesium. And, of course, if you have more serious conditions that have to be treated quickly, then you can do intravenous magnesium as well. Jen, I just want to mention, when you talked about the different types of magnesium, probably one of the better tolerated is magnesium glycinate. And here's a tricky thing with any of the magnesiums. When it says magnesium glycinate, 1,000 milligrams, that doesn't mean 1,000 milligrams of magnesium. It means 1,000 milligrams of the combination of magnesium and glycinate. Then you want to look underneath it, because normally they'll say how much elemental magnesium is in there. So in the case of magnesium glycinate, it's usually about 100 milligrams of magnesium in the magnesium glycinate molecule, if you have 1,000 milligrams of that. There's another new magnesium, and you've probably heard about this one as well, magnesium threonate. And that has some very good write-ups about it, and it may turn out to be a great form, well-tolerated, and also can pass the blood-brain barrier and be effective there as well.
Such an incredible formula or form of magnesium, very specific for a variety of different brain issues, focus, concentration, memory, recall, the addressing of different symptoms of forgetfulness. So fabulous, fabulous form, that magnesium threonate.
Now, Janet, back to diabetes and prediabetes. In the United States, it's estimated that nearly 80 million people, well, one in four, has some form of diabetes or prediabetes. And that's a lot of people. Type 2 diabetes among children and teens have also skyrocketed. So this is a major issue confronting everybody, but you have to be diagnosed. And right now, mainstream medicine is letting people go on with the problem until they develop diabetes. And that's, you know, letting it go on for a long time before any intervention is done. So that's why the testing is so important. So if you, all right, let's say, you know, like I said, a fasting blood sugar is really not the best indicator, because when it's too high, that means you've got diabetes. But what about pre-diabetes? If you, at least if you can get your doctor to do a fasting insulin level, you want that level to be between 2 and 4, because that would be considered a normal level if you're not doing the glucose insulin tolerance test, which is a little, would be a little more precise. But you want a low level of 2 and 4 on a fasting insulin. And if you're higher than that, the likelihood is that you do have pre-diabetes. And that's where, that's when you want to start doing two things. You want to improve your diet, and you want to take a good look at the type of exercise you're doing. And if you're not exercising, and initiate exercise. And if you are exercising, make sure you're doing the kind of exercise that will lower your blood sugar levels and improve insulin resistance.
Dr. Slavin, how often do you correlate triglyceride levels to the potential for someone to ultimately develop diabetes?
It's all part of the same syndrome, if you want to call it insulin resistance or syndrome X, or they have several names for the same thing. High triglycerides are associated with it because, again, it's the carbohydrates in your body that will raise triglyceride levels. So if you see high triglycerides, you can correct it. I've seen people's triglycerides go down by hundreds of points just by changing their diet.
So. It's very interesting, because so many people who might be dealing with an elevated glucose level, possibly an elevated A1C and high triglycerides, and there really isn't very, very much. You know, maybe they're just in the high normal range, and there isn't very much that their doctors are suggesting that they do. And when I start to talk to them, they may say, well, I don't have a sweet tooth. I really don't use very much sugar. And when we begin to talk about it, they are consuming bread and muffins and pasta, cereal for breakfast. And they'll say, but I don't have a cereal that has sugar on it. And, you know, I have a very good, high-quality whole wheat bread. And they don't understand what's happening to them.
That's exactly right. When we come back after this break, we'll talk more specifically about dietary changes and exercise regimens. But right now, you're listening to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Dr. Herb Slavin, and with me is Janice Cimarelli, licensed nutritionist, and we'll be back right after this.
Advanced Medical Testing Centers is proud to sponsor Natural Doc Radio, co-hosted by Dr. Herbert Slavin, MD, and Janice Cimarelli, licensed nutrition counselor. We are located at 7200 West Commercial Boulevard, Suite 209 in Lauderhill. And you can find us on the web at amtcenters.com. Advanced Medical Testing Centers is your premier blood draw center, staffed by professionals with over 15 years experience, clean, comfortable, and efficient. We guarantee your appointment time and guarantee the lowest price. We test for cardiovascular disease, cancer, diabetes, and more. We draw for all specialty labs, including Access, Health Diagnostic, Singulex, Innovative, Quest, LabCorp, and others. Call us today to set up an appointment. 754-216-2332. That's 754-216-2332.
Hi, I'm Janet Cimarelli, licensed nutrition counselor and co-host of Natural Doc Radio. If you're in search of the fountain of youth, if you're trying to figure out how to stay young and healthy, there are three main factors that will determine how well you age. The good news is you can take control of all of them and dramatically slow down your aging process. Through my counseling sessions, I work with clients and manage these three areas to stay young, vibrant, and healthy. I can help you maintain optimal health that will keep you looking and feeling young again. I provide you with the in-depth knowledge and information you need to slow the aging process. So schedule your appointment today, JanetCimarelli.com. Don't wait, your clock is ticking.
And we're back. You're listening to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Dr. Herb Slavin, and joining us today is Janet Cimarelli, licensed nutritionist. Just a quick reminder that we have a special guest tomorrow, Dr. Lennon Horowitz. And last Friday, we had Dr. Sherry Rogers. And if you missed the show, you can go to naturaldocradio.com because we archive all the shows there. So if you don't have a chance to listen to tomorrow's show, you can find it on naturaldocradio.com as well. Now, Janet, we've been talking about diabetes and prediabetes. And if you're identified with the problem, and that's the first problem is people are being overlooked because they're not being tested properly. You want to change your diet. You know, that means removing all forms of sugar, particularly fructose. But here's the key, and this is what really gets people upset. You want to remove your grains from the diet, even if they're the healthy grains, such as whole grains, or you mentioned organic wheat and things like that, because those are the things that affect insulin levels. Fructose, grains, and other sugar-forming starchy carbohydrates, and that's the key. Sugar-forming starchy carbohydrates are largely responsible for your body's adverse insulin reactions. So cut those out, and that's why when people say, but what's left to eat? I mean, that's a telltale sign in itself. We recommend the intermittent fasting approach where you eat during a 6 to 8 hour window every day and give your body 16 to 18 hours of rest time as far as digesting foods. And this helps the body heal itself. And basically, you're avoiding breakfast because most people don't eat a healthy breakfast and stick to lunch and dinner. The other area we want to mention is exercise. And we have to stress, the recommendations by the government, of course, that people get out and start walking. I think that any exercise is better than no exercise, clearly. But if you are going to exercise, you really want to do the one that's going to give you the most benefit in the shortest period of time. And I think that's what's important about what they call high-intensity interval training. Now, see, the federal guidelines tell you to get at least 2.5 hours a week of moderate intensity exercise, such as brisk walking. And even with that, minor amount of exercise, what's 2.5 hours a week? What's that, 30 minutes a day? Only 30% of adult men and women report getting even 10 minutes or so of physical activity a week. So that's where I think part of the problem stems from. So it's a combination of not eating properly, not exercising. It's not a lack of medication. This is stuff, these are the diseases that we inflict upon ourselves. So the reason I'm bringing this up is 2.5 hours a week. Okay. People aren't doing it. They're doing, maybe 10 minutes of exercise a week, but you can drastically reduce the amount of time you spend a week exercising if you do the right kind of exercise. And that's where the high intensity interval training comes in. What they found is that in just 3 minutes, now I recommend doing more than this, but in just 3 minutes of high intensity training per week for 4 weeks, improved the participants' insulin sensitivity on average of 24%. So imagine that. I mean, so start doing it. What I tell patients is, look, start off easy, something you're going to keep up with. If you create unrealistic expectations, for example, maybe walking a half hour is maybe it's too hot outside or it's too difficult for you, then just walk for 10 minutes. Do what you can, but do it on a consistent basis. And as your level of fitness improves, you'll be able to do more. But it's the high intensity that's the key. And everybody has a different level of high intensity. It's based on your level of fitness, clearly. But you want to really put out a maximum effort for as long as you can. But don't overstress your body. So that when you reach the point that you're really out of breath, you know, that's the time to, you know, slow it down, catch your breath, and then bring it back up once you're recovered from the stress of the high intensity. So that's the point. So you can get the better benefits with high intensity interval training than you would with just, you know, moderate intensity walking for a half hour every day. Janet, do you ever do that? Have you ever tried the high intensity interval training?
That's the one that I do just because I like to get it over with really, really quick. So my recommendation is 5 minutes morning and evening. And my statement is just about everybody's got 5 minutes. And if you want to start, you can start just feet on the ground in front of the television and do, it looks very, very silly, but a very, very fast running in place routine. The approach that I use is very, very fast on an elliptical, and you go as long as you can, and then slow down and recover, and all you have to do is 5 minutes. Everybody's got 5 minutes. And you don't need any special equipment. If you wanted to, if you're reasonably fit and you have a soft floor carpeting, you can do jumping jacks. You don't need any kind of very special equipment, and it's over in 5 minutes.
All right, so let's use jumping jacks as an example. You know, you do them as fast as you can for as long as you can. That may be 10 jumping jacks or maybe 30. Doesn't matter. And then when you reach the point where you're really short of breath, then just go into a marching in place mode until you catch your breath, and then you repeat the cycle again. You just want to get that, give your body the stress, and that's what is going to help improve insulin sensitivity.
So, sensitivity is the critical issue here. As soon as you get your insulin working properly, then your blood sugar balances much more correctly. Well, very, very important to understand that high fructose corn syrup is one of the components that is ubiquitous in so many of our prepared foods, certainly in our sugar-sweetened drinks. And high fructose corn syrup bypasses the pancreas, does not trigger the release of insulin. Consequently, the stress on your liver is very, very great, and the ability to control that blood sugar chemistry is minimized. So if you're consuming anything that has high fructose corn syrup in there, you are very specifically stressing your blood sugar levels, and those elevated blood sugar levels mean damage to very fine, delicate tissue. So the delicate tissue in your kidneys, the delicate tissue in your eyes, in your blood vessels, and in your brain. Keep in mind, one of the kind of nickname, if you will, for Alzheimer's disease is diabetes of the brain. So out of control blood sugar chemistry creates such a cascade of negative possibilities in your body. Look for any product that you might have in your house containing high fructose corn syrup.
And we've been talking about, you know, diabetes and pre-diabetes, and the pre-diabetes condition is starting in the teenage years. So that's really the sooner you identify the problem and correct the changes, you can, number one, reverse the insulin resistance problem and therefore prevent all the accruing problems that develop from insulin resistance. And the benefit of these strategies we've just recommended, first of all, correct the magnesium deficiency, that's very important. Other nutrients associated with diabetes is low vitamin D. So, you know, check those levels out as well. Do that insulin glucose tolerance test. Identify that you have the problem, and then you have a baseline for repeat testing to show the improvement. But if you just go on the intermittent fasting, where you're eating between a 6 and 8 hour diet and avoiding the sugary carbohydrates or the ones that are converted right to sugar as opposed to vegetables. We're not saying vegetables, except for rice and potatoes, basically. But fruits, too many people having too much fruit, that's a problem. When you change your diet like that, you're going to lose weight. It's guaranteed. And I've seen patients, you know, normalize their high blood pressure, their cholesterol and triglycerides, their blood sugar levels, just by making the dietary changes alone, but add in the exercise, and you get so many more benefits just from that as well.
I just want to remind everybody that tomorrow Dr. Lynn Horowitz will be with us speaking about all of the activities that he's been up to since we last had him here in South Florida. He'll be talking to us from Hawaii. And on Friday, Dr. Sherry Rogers will be back with us again. And she has such important information for supporting our good health. Dr. Slavin?
All right. And she'll be referring to one of her books, Is Your Cardiologist Killing You? And that's on Friday. I'd like to thank you all for listening. You've been listening to Natural Doc Radio. I'm Dr. Herb Slavin, and with us is been Janice Cimarelli, licensed nutritionist, and we'll see you again tomorrow. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
You have been listening to Natural Doc Radio, brought to you by AMT Centers, bringing you health information based on the latest research from respected sources around the world. Learn what you can do to enhance health, strengthen muscles, maximize memory, and energize all the systems of your body. Listen every day for health information on the latest testing procedures available at AMT Centers, as well as the interpretation and action needed based on your test results. Listen for special events at Advanced Medical Testing Centers. Tune in again next time and get healthy.